Welcome to the Biz Trends Report 2024 In-Depth Insight Series. My name is Danette Breitenbach and I am the editor of Marketing and Media at Biz Community. Today we are chatting to Mike Saunders of DigiLab. Mike is an industry inspiration with over a decade of experience of helping people succeed in the digital economy. His expertise and passion have made a significant impact and have inspired others to make an impact in the digital economy. As the founder of DigitLab, he has empowered thousands of individuals to find their customers and build their careers and businesses. Mike is also an entrepreneur and the author of four books, and today he's going to be sharing insights from his latest publication, Human-Centric, a framework for building a business that will thrive in the fourth industrial revolution. This report looks at how, in the future, people will want to engage with technology, as well as the touch points of engagement and business opportunities in the digital data, especially in Africa. Mike, welcome to Biz Trends Report. Tell us a little bit more about your human-centric report. Maybe you can give us just a general outline of what it's about.
Well, thanks so much for the invite to Biz Trends. It's really great to be here. And yeah, human-centric really was a opportunity for me to share some ideas that we had around what it meant for technology to be human-centric, because we centered on this idea that all tech ultimately didn't really mean much unless it meant something to somebody. That whenever you looked at like tech succeeding in any business or any sort of intervention that it made in society, it was always valuable to people. And so we looked at that intervention and we realized that that was the success point for all tech. And so that's what human-centric was really about, was how do you make technology human-centric? How do you build technology in that way? And that's really what that publication was about, looking at it from a point of view of what human centricity meant and how technology could learn from it. Yeah.
That's great. Why is it important? Why is the human element so important in tech?
I think the human element is so important because the ultimate reason for a lot of technology is really to accelerate the human nature of who we are. Like if we look at all kind of technology interventions, they tend to look after the things that make us less human. And whenever we open up the doors for new technology revolutions to take place, they're always met with like, what are we going to do now? And we always find ourselves in a place where we end up feeling like we're being more human, like we're opening the door to being more of ourselves and having to do less of the menial, less of the things that we don't really want to do. And so I've always seen technology as an accelerator of who we are and what's really the potential for us. And so that human element of buying into technology is such a key thing because it is that thing that technology is meant for at the end of the day. If we weren't bringing technology into the space for human beings, then what would the point of it be at the end of the day?
When we talk about human-centric and technology making, helping the human condition, are there very specific trends that we are seeing happening here?
Yeah, I think, I mean, AI is a huge one, obviously. The impact of AI. So I think maybe if I can share it like this. When I first got into technology and when I first got into this digital space, I got in it around the social media rush. And what I loved about what I was seeing in social media was that it was changing the dynamic of how humans behaved. And it was a technology push that was so hard that there was this really big shift in the way in which things were happening. There was a lot of innovation in the space and it was shifting the way in which the world was working and business was working, and that it was a very exciting space to be. And especially being on the forefront of a lot of conversations around that, it was just a really exciting space. And if I was really honest with myself, and if we were really honest as an industry in marketing and advertising space, from that day onwards, we kind of had this big thing of innovation for a period of time, and then it kind of waned. And we went through this period of like non-innovation for a long time, where we were almost promising and using these innovation words and saying all these things and trying to sound like we were still keeping up with this massive accelerator that we'd seen, but we hadn't really. And for me, AI is that next accelerator push that we're seeing. And I think when you talk about like these trends that are taking place, I think this adaptation that we have and the way in which we almost come up against technology that almost challenges us to say, well, what actually makes us more human? And so like one of the most exciting things that I find around all these conversations around AI, especially in the ad industry that we see, is that it's pushing creatives to be more creative because it's the only place that we can show our identity as human beings. And it's pushing people to become the problem solver and to become the strategist and to become these things that actually our brains are meant to do. They're meant to be the problem solvers. They're meant to deal with the bigger issues. They're not meant to deal with just the normal, the processing of information and like solving the analytical and all the rest of it. Yes, those are things that we can do, but it's not what we're meant to do all day. Like actually we get fired up about the other things, you know? And so when you put a technology in that all of a sudden says, well, I can do this for you. And we get scared, senseless about the fact that, well, what are we going to do for a living? All of a sudden we have to now compete with a machine for our jobs. And all of a sudden we're going, well, what makes us human? It's creativity. It's problem solving. It's these things. And we look back at our children and we go like, how are we going to prepare you for the future? And we're saying, well, we're going to have to prepare you to be problem solvers and creatives. And these are now the things that are going to make you human. And so I think for me, I think we're still mapping out these trends. But I think like one of the things that is so clear in the future is that this human skill set of being creative, like actually being creative, one of the more immediate places we see it is in copywriting. Like you can spot AI a mile away and you can spot good copywriting a mile away now. And we never used to see that. You know, we used to see, oh, that's copy, you know, but now we can all of a sudden spot good copy because now mediocre copy looks like AI. And we almost say like, that looks like AI, but you know, it's just because it's wordy and clumsy and, you know, so it's an interesting space. I think we're going to raise the bar. I think this creative thing is going to become a huge trend, especially in human behavior, is that we're going to demand it a lot more than we've seen before.
So we're going to, technology is accelerating, but it's allowing us to become more human. But what is the role of data here? Why is data important in this process?
So I think the first thing to understand is that underpinning social media, the internet, information, AI, all of these things is data. That's underpinning. You can't actually do any of it without a really good understanding of data. AI makes the understanding of that data that much easier, and like it's giving you a processing engine, especially sort of generative AI and those kinds of things. But at the pinnacle of this, that's the data conversation, is that if we don't have our handle on data, then we can't really compete in this digital space. And I think that's what people are struggling with in business, is we kind of prioritized the front end of digital. My website, beautiful, my social media, my customer service, all of that stuff. But because we didn't prioritize this back end, there's nothing there now. And so we're on its back foot from being able to compete in an AI world, being able to compete in a digital space where data is actually the thing that we need. And so we're struggling in that space. And I think like when we talk about trends, I think that's going to be one of the big things, is that we're going to see a lot of businesses struggling on a back foot from a competitive space. And I think we're going to see this big divergence of people that are going to be leading this data game and this AI game, and a lot of laggards. But this like middle road, I don't think we're going to see a lot of middle road. we're going to see a lot of laggards and a lot of people pushing at the front. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Tell me a little bit about how you can actually work with your data strategies. How do you leverage, for example, MarTech to get there? And perhaps you can explain that concept a little bit as well.
We spent the last year researching and surveying business to really try and understand their position on this. So we've got some really strong survey data that is showing us a bit of a landscape of what's taking place here. And what I'm seeing is that when it comes to being able to leverage data and leverage, for want of a better phrase, a data-driven strategy, the ones that are kind of really driving that hard are the ones that are leaning on marketing technology tools. They are the ones that are able to, in any particular way, they're the ones that are actually able to leverage data to the best of their capability and be able to kind of act in a more agile fashion. And so because of that, I think that we've got this this need for businesses to understand that, and marketers to understand that there is a new there's a new piece of their marketing arsenal that needs to come into play, and that is product. That as marketing teams, they need to not just be thinking about their skill sets as people and maybe their agency. And so it's not a case of what's insourced and what's outsourced. It needs to be a case of what's insourced and what's outsourced and what platforms you're actually adopting as a business to be able to market. What are the systems that you're putting into place? What are these things that you're having? Because you actually need to start building these technologies into space, because marketing is a technology business. And so we need to be thinking about this, because the data conversation for marketers isn't so much about the ones and zeros in the data. It's about what we can trigger off the data. And so the systems that need to be put into place are more about systems that can trigger off data than they are about looking after and managing data. And so the MarTech conversation, the technologies that are going to help them do this, that's going to be really important in the future for businesses today.
With data and the MarTech, how does this change the actual skill set that you're talking about now? How does it change that skill set of your marketing professional? And do we have these skill sets? Do we have them coming through? Do we have them currently? What is the current state of, I suppose, marketing in terms of technology?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we're going to see a lot more product-related tech skill sets. We already sort of see it. As an example, we see product businesses releasing their own academies. So you see like Salesforce releasing courses and HubSpot releasing courses. You see MailChimp doing the same thing. And you see all of these different businesses and products themselves releasing their own course material. But I do think that we're going to see more products leading the charge in terms of what type of skill sets we need. I do think we're going to see technology-driven marketers coming to play. This idea of a technical marketer, I don't know if that's the role or the term that we're going to call it. A technical marketer today is someone who is like a technical writer. You have a business that's very technical, and so that's what we would call a technical marketer. But I think someone who is technically minded, who can get into a piece of software and write a workflow, not a coder. And I think that there's a big difference between a developer on a marketing team and somebody who knows how to use a piece of software to make something happen in that space. And there's a big difference between the two. And knowing that, I think, is going to be really key, especially if you want to internalize these resources. And if you look at businesses that are accelerating at pace, like I'm talking, like if you look at the South African businesses that are pumping, that are moving at like astronomical paces, they have bought into technology and they're buying tech. They're not building it. They're buying technology on their marketing and sales fronts, and they are hiring people to run that tech for them. They are not hiring developers to build and to do and to. They might be doing pieces of it, but they are running their businesses off the back of these tools, and it is so interesting to see, because what they're doing is they're outsourcing the build, so that they can accelerate their business, and it's fascinating to watch. You know, during COVID, the top four CRM businesses. They were some of the biggest development companies around. They were the amount of the growth on the technology that came out of CRM companies over that period was mind-blowing. The innovation cycle was astronomical that came out of those businesses. So when you see in the marketing tech space the fight for what we call first party data and all of these things, like, the fight for all of that has almost been won from a MarTech perspective. It's already there. But yet marketers are still trying to fight that fight for themselves. And they're still trying to adopt things their way because they haven't taken a view to understand what's taking place and what people have done in the technology space. And that's where when we talk about future trends, I think the guys that will succeed will be the ones that understand the product of technology, of marketing, and adopt the right products for their business. We have this thing in marketing where we outsource the ownership of the product to the agency that runs it. And it's my personal belief that needs to stop.
How do you think organizations can shift their mindset in this regard? And also so that they start looking at a more customer-centric way of operating?
Another massive, massive question. And again, I want to point to some data that we've been looking at. So the data that we've been looking at in our insight report shows something fascinating. So what we did is we asked a question, which was, which of the following things are important in designing your strategies for 2024? And we gave them a bunch of things, but what was interesting to me was the ranking. So number one was personal experience. So the number one thing that people put into their ability to drive their strategy was their own personal experience. The next thing was that came into that list was budget, which is very much expected inside of today's global economy. I mean, I'm not even going to just say South African economy. Today's global economy is under pressure, so it's understandable that budget is high. But I don't think that it's all that out of the picture. A lot of our decisions in business are driven by budget. Then comes advice from consultants. And then number four on the average build, number four comes customer feedback. And it's like a small little percentage. If I showed you the graph, it's like a little sliver, and the others take up quite a big mark. And so here's what I'm saying. I'm saying we literally as an industry, globally and in South Africa, as an industry, we chant religiously that the center of your business should be the customer. And as marketers, we're waving this flag, this is what's gonna happen. But then come down to it, when we're building our strategy, it's number four on the list. So the interesting thing for me is, how do you, we say, well, how do we do this? I think we're so far from being able to answer that question, because we don't even know how to get the customer to the table, because there could be a bunch of reasons why customer feedback's not there. I don't know how to capture it. The information that I get, I don't trust. One of the things that's interesting to me is the fact that the number one thing that builds my strategy for next year is personal experience. And when you look at marketers and you look at how marketers become marketers and what makes them good at what they do, it's gut. You know, what makes a lawyer good at being a lawyer and an accountant good at being an accountant is logic. What makes marketers good at what we do, gut. We make decisions here, you know, and in our heart. And like, that's what makes us good. Like, that's where we, but now you're going to give us customer data and ask us to make decisions on the back of that. We're saying customer must be king. But then you give us customer data and we're not listening to it. Why? Because we're not logical. So this is a tension that I think marketers are going to struggle with, is that if we say that the customer needs to be the center and the mechanisms that are going to help us do that are data centric, we're going to have to find a way to manage this tension between gut and decisions and data decisions, because the way in which our customer is going to get their voice heard in our business is by data and at least the right voice, because the wrong voice is being heard inside social media by yelling and screaming that they're unhappy, and those are all just the unhappy people, and they're just jumping on trend and they're jumping on viral and they're jumping on whatever it is to make you feel like you did something wrong. But the voice that you actually want to hear, that consistent voice around whether you're doing the right thing or not, that sits in your data. And that should come out of good principles of consistently managing and checking and surveying your customers on an ongoing basis. That comes out of discipline. Again, logic, like methodical things that we do, things that, like, marketers, when you hit repeat on something, we start losing interest, you know? So I feel like there's a nature of like what marketers are going to need to figure out in the way we design our teams and the way in which we build, because there's this tension now of building this balance between logic and gut, and it's going to be an interesting space. But we've got to do it, because the tool set that we have is data driven. And that's going to expect things from us.
I must say, this tension that you're talking about between, you know, the data or the logic and then the gut feel, it is extremely interesting. And I suppose we see it in other places as well. How does an organization, I suppose, reconcile the two? But perhaps it's something to do more with what you spoke about earlier, about being human-centric, where the data can do a lot of the work for us, and then we can probably be more creative in other areas. Would this be correct, and would this be a trend that we would see developing?
I think businesses, as an example, that are relying on data and AI to run the creative and the engagement, as an example, would be remiss to understand the value of human creativity and the value of a human connection point, as an example. But then in the same light, businesses that are trying to do everything themselves and be human and gut driven and would be remiss to understand the beauty of data and how it allows you to scale and drive your business forward at pace on lighter teams, on lighter workloads, etc. So there's got to be this marriage somewhere in the middle, and what I am learning quite quickly is it's industry specific. You know, what's lovely about a chatbot, as an example, is a chatbot is the most accepted interface for AI to interface with a human being. We're comfortable with that. We're comfortable with chatting to AI via that, as comfortable as we are chatting to our moms and dads. And so if you were, say, a software company and you had an AI bot helping with customer service, no one would care. We'd all accept that. But if you were a doctor providing an AI service application and charging people for advice via your AI app, people would have issues. Because there's a trust game there that doesn't feel right, you know? And so And maybe it's a case of we're not there yet, or maybe it's a case of we should never really be there, you know? So I think there's nuances that's going to play in each industry, and I think that there's a need for us to find that balance between what is human and what is tech, and to lean into humanness, but also to understand the value of that technology. And to over-lean in one way or the other, I think, is dangerous. But to learn, so you've got to have one eye on humanity, and you've got to have one eye on technology, and you've got to lean hard in both, and then bring the best out of both. If you ran your whole HR team virtually, and used data to understand how great their performance was, and then you ran your performance review using AI via a chatbot, I think people would leave. But if that's not really culture the way we understand it, but some people would love it. So I think that there's just so many facets to this tension between humanity and technology, and it's, to be honest, it's why I do what I do. I love it. I love this balance that we find ourselves in.
I must say, it's really interesting the way you talk about this with the tension between the technology and the humanness. And it's if you think about it, you can think about it in sort of in our everyday life everywhere. One of the things you your data has also found that's very interesting is that larger organizations, oddly enough, are less data savvy. Where smaller, and maybe this comes down to being more agile and be able to move quicker, are actually more competitive in this space. Perhaps talk us through the insight here and if there is a trend that is developing here and what does that mean?
Yeah, definitely. So what I think is that, so let me unpack that data a little bit more for you. So what's taking place is that larger organizations are really struggling to catch up and move at a fast enough pace in this data game. So the data maturity of organizations, the more you push revenue up, the lower that maturity gets. Now, it's not like a rule set. So once you get down to like really small businesses, you still have a data maturity that starts to get lower. But where the sweet spot is actually in that middle, what we call the Marlins. So it's that like 50 to 100 mil marker in revenue. Okay. That's the sweet spot around data maturity. That bracket seems to have the highest data maturity. And that's because, in my opinion, they've got an opportunity. They've got some spare cash flow. That bracket seems to have a good, like they're about to eclipse into that bigger whale market, and they're looking to grow. That's a hungry market looking to grow. They've got opportunities, but their hierarchical structures are low, and so the decision making happens much faster. Whereas what we call the whales, those bigger organizations, I mean, it's interesting. Statistically, these aren't our stats, but statistically, a large organization, a whale organization, takes 18 months to execute a strategic decision. So after they've decided that a data strategy is a good idea, it'll take them 18 months to execute it, if it's executed well. And that could be, oh, we need a data center. So that'd be like step one, But the idea of being able to trigger data off of customer interactions, that could be years down the line. And that's why we see so many whales acquiring businesses, because that's how they keep up. And because it's much faster to acquire than it is to try and build internally. But then they struggle with other issues. So what's interesting for me in this particular space is this Marlin category. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Marlins stepping into that whale category, but without growing the size of their business. They're going to eat into this revenue. They're going to grow this revenue, but they're not going to necessarily grow their business size. And they're going to do that off the back of an understanding of their customer data or their business data. Whatever data they're using, their edge is going to come out of that space. And when you look at the budget data that we have on that as well, we've got budget data that's showing that businesses today are struggling with budget management. So we have Wales that are, the typical trend in Wales in struggling economies is to take out a CapEx and to invest hard into marketing, because that's how you stay a whale. But what's also happening at the moment is that lots of Wales are significantly reducing marketing budget. And that's a sign of struggling businesses. Now, if you've got a whole series of struggling businesses inside a difficult economy, and you've got a base of Marlins ready to take on that chunk, I think we're going to see a very, very volatile space here, where it's not the whales, the existing whales, that are going to get the market share from the from these declining whales on this end, that it's actually going to be these Marlins that are going to step up, and they're going to run more efficient businesses on lighter teams that are going to deliver better products to clients at the end of the day. And it's going to be off the back of their data strategies. It's going to, I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to show up some really fascinating businesses.
Tell us, in your opinion, and based on your report and everything you found, what is the biggest trend that we are going to see quite soon?
Okay. I would like to say that the groundswell is showing me that the biggest trend I think we're going to feel over the next 1 to 5 years is first party data. And I believe that a lot of people are talking about it now as like a competitive edge, but I think they're going to slowly start to realize it's a necessity. And the groundswell that I'm talking about are things like existing businesses with data strategies that are competing against you. The fact that CRM businesses have had that massive push on technology that I spoke to you about. What a lot of people don't realize is that a first data strategy is a CRM strategy. They think it's something else. They think it's smarter than that, but it actually isn't for a lot of businesses. It can be, but for a lot of businesses, that's all it is. And the tech that's behind a lot of these things can equip you for a lot of those things, but we think it's got to be more than that. So we're trying not to engage because we think it's going to be more than what it actually is. And so I think that's one of the groundswells, is that the technology exists. It's actually like people can buy it. And then couple that with the fact that because of all this personal GDPR, poppy controls, all of this stuff, the advertising industry is struggling to show return on investment because they can't utilize personal data the way they used to drive the return on investment that they used to. And business needs to find a way to get that return on investment a different way. And I'm having conversations like that left, right, and center. And I love the media industry, and I think there's some really innovative concepts. But as hard as they want to try, what they could do 2 years ago, they're not allowed to do now. And so they can still do cool things, but the return on investment is not what businesses used to. And so they need to find another way of doing it. And first-party data is the only way they're going to be able to figure stuff out like that. Because they can no longer go to these third-party stores and access that information. It's the trend needs to be first-party data. And I think it's going to happen, one, because of the groundswell, and two, because I think people are going to get forced into it because there's going to be no other option. Everyone's going to be there.
According to your work that you've done and the research, are there organizations that are on the right track? And, you know, are they getting there?
Yes, definitely. And what I can tell you is that I think that there are a couple of key principles that people are getting right. I think one of the key principles is that they're not trying to put all the data in one system. So it's not, they're not trying to create the Uber system, which I think a lot of people are trying to do. They're creating a system that is very good at triggering things, and then they're integrating. So they're playing an API integration game. And by playing an API integration game, it allows them to move quicker because they can just link to the data sources that they need and bring them into play. And then they can use their tech to trigger and move and make things happen. And I think that's what's important. What you want to be very focused on is how do I access, understand, and trigger? And the businesses that are getting it right have understood that. You should be able to launch within months, not within years, and within weeks if you're a smaller business. So that I think is one of the key things that people are getting right. And then the other thing is that businesses that have a very good, clear understanding of their data regulations around POPI and GDPR and how that impacts the various different markets that they go into and is able to almost segment them accordingly, those businesses are doing well because you can play differently than what everybody thinks you can. But we don't because we've applied this broad brushstroke as a country. And it's because of ignorance and fear. And I think that that's a concern. So I would say those two key principles, really understanding legislation and then looking for something lightweight that allows you to trigger and actually create the experiences that you're looking for that integrates with technology and Triumph instead of trying to build that Uber application. Businesses that what I'm seeing are the ones that are succeeding, those tend to be the things that they're getting right.
Thank you so much, Mike. That has been really informative. I found it particularly interesting, this tension between technology and us humans. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that pans out and also how all the industries are using data and which ones are going to be successful. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it here at this community.
Thanks so much for the invite. It's been a really big privilege to share this platform with you. So thanks again.